Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to Kitchen Politics 123, the radio show. This is Martin Luther King Day, January 15, 2024. Happy birthday, Martin Luther King Jr. You did well for America. is a day of peace. It's a time of remembrance. It's a time of celebration. He was a great man. And tonight also we'll have the Republican caucus in Iowa. Welcome to the Big Show. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Hello, Laurie. Are you there? Okay, no, not yet. Let's do this again. Welcome to the Big Show. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico.
Hi, this is Laurie Picka from Michigan. Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes, yes. Hello. It was my fault. I didn't press the microphone for you to be
live. Okay, all right.
I apologize about that.
That's okay.
Yes, so as I was saying, it is January 15th, 2024, Martin Luther King Day. So happy birthday to Martin Luther King, the great American, who, you know, believes in peace, and he believes in uniting black people and uniting America through peaceful methods. And also today is Republican Iowa caucus. Republicans lie,
right.
Trump lies, and he lies. They're all liars. In nearly 4 years, Joe Biden has set records as president of the United States. So tonight, we discuss why he deserves America's vote for a second term, and we'll explain why Trump will go to prison. All this and more, so you can't afford to miss this great episode tonight. Thanks for sharing across all social media. Call us in at 515-605-9802. Say your first name and where you're calling from. We're on every Sunday, Monday, and Thursday, starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time. We're not anti-social, just anti-stupid. Let's get cooking. Mm-hmm. Okay, Laurie. So, the 10 things about Martin Luther King that would be more or might not know.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, he would be 95 years old today on his birthday.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so the 10th, I thought this was interesting because I didn't know some of this. So 10 things you may not know about Martin Luther King Jr. Of course, we know that he was a Baptist minister and a social activist. Born in 1929, he passed away in 1968. He dedicated his life to the
He was assassinated, not passed away. He was assassinated, not passed away.
Yes, I know he was assassinated. I'm sorry. He was assassinated and he died in 1968. He spent his whole life with a nonviolent struggle for justice in this country is what he did. And his leadership played a pivotal role in ending entrenched segregation for Black Americans, the creation of Civil Rights Act of 1964. So here are 10 of the things that we may not know about Martin Luther King. I'll start one, David. You can go to the next if you like. King's birth name, Michael, not Martin. King was born Michael King Jr. on January the 15th, 1929. In 1934, however, his father, a pastor at Atlanta's Ebenezer Baptist Church, traveled to Germany and became inspired by the Protestant Reformation leader, Martin Luther. As a result, King Sr. changed his own name as well as that of his 5-year-old son. I found that very interesting.
Oh.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah.
So number two, yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's new to me.
Yeah, that was that. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so number two, Martin Luther King Jr. entered college at the age of 15. King was such a gifted student that he skipped grades 9 and 12 before enrolling in 1944 at Morehouse College, the alma mater of his father and maternal grandfather. Although he was a son, grandson, and great-great-grandson of Baptist ministers, King did not intend to follow the family's vocation until Morehouse president Benjamin E. Mays, a noted theologian, convinced him otherwise. King was ordained before graduating college with a degree in sociology.
Yeah, that's another thing. I did not know that he entered college at 15. That's a big deal. Wow. You know?
Yes, indeed.
Number King received his doctorate in systematic theology. After earning a divinity degree from Pennsylvania Crozer Theological Seminary, King attended graduate school at Boston University, where he received his Ph.D. degree in 1955. The title of his dissertation was, and I quote, "A Comparison of the Conceptions of God in the Thinking of Paul Tillich and Henry Nelson Wyman." Okay.
Nice. Number four, King's I Have a Dream speech was not his first at a Lincoln Memorial. 6 years before his iconic oration and the March on Washington, King was among the civil rights leader who spoke in the shadow of the great emancipator during the prayer pilgrimage for freedom on May 17, 1957. Before a crowd estimated at between 15,000 and 30,000, King delivered his first national address on the topic of voting rights. His speech, in which he urged America to give us the ballot, drew strong reviews and positioned him at the forefront of civil rights leadership. So the I Have a Dream speech was classic, and he made it in front of 30,000 people at the Washington Memorial. And it's in Black History in the United States. It's a rich and verified chronicle of slavery and liberty, oppression and progression, segregation and achievement. And he headed that dream. And, of course, in that dream, he did say he may make it to the promised land with us. And he didn't, because he was cut down by an assassin's bullet, allegedly by, what's his name? A white segregationist, but, a lot of fear is going out there that the FBI and CIA and the powers that be were the ones who were responsible for his assassination. So, you know, that's up in the air, basically, you know, and, you have to take it with a grain of salt. You know, you can't really take everything the government say. That, you know, is gospel.
So, number five, King was imprisoned nearly 30 times. According to the King Center, the civil rights leader went to jail 29 times. He was arrested for acts of civil disobedience and trumped up charges, such as when he was jailed in Montgomery, Alabama in 1956. For driving 30 miles per hour in a 25 mile per hour zone. That's pretty shitty.
Yeah, what can I say? That was America back then. And some things still haven't changed, have they? Yeah, and, you know, the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., it was by James Earl Ray, according to, you know, he was an American fugitive convicted of the assassination of Martin Luther King. And he was a racist, a devout racist, Klan member and everything. You know, so I guess he was a patsy, you know. Because some of MLK's children don't really believe that it was him who assassinated him, but it was a bigger government conspiracy, you know. So, you know, I guess in time you find out, you know, in history when certain papers are made public of what really happened. Number six, King narrowly escaped assassination attempt a decade before his death. On September 20th, 1958, King was in Harlem signing copies of his new book, Stride Towards Freedom, in Bloomstein's department store, when he was approached by Isola Ware Curry. The woman asked if he was Martin Luther King Jr. After he said yes, Curry said, quote, "I've been looking for you for 5 years, end quote. And she plunged a 7-inch letter opener in his chest. The tip of the blade came to rest alongside his aorta, and King underwent hours of delicate emergency surgery. Surgeons later told King that just one sneeze could have punctured the aorta and killed him. From his hospital bed, where he have escalated for weeks, King issued a statement affirming his nonviolent principles and saying he felt no ill will towards his mentally ill attacker. So he's better than me, really, because if somebody tried to kill me, I'm going to make sure that son of a bitch is dead. You know? He has a patience of Job.
Wow, I did not know that. That's awful. That is really awful.
Mm-hmm.
And it says a lot of character, if you think about it, just saying that he felt no ill will towards his mentally ill attacker. And I think the attacker was a woman.
I remember it was a woman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, wow. That's amazing. Number seven, King's last public speech foretold his death. King had come to Memphis in April 1968 to support the strike of the city's black garbage workers. And in a speech on the night before his assassination, he told an audience at Mason Temple Church, "Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we, as a people, we will get to the promised land, and I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." I quote.
Yes. That was a great speech. And you can put up there with a Gettysburg Address, the Kennedy speech on his inauguration, you know. The man is just a legend, basically. So members of the King family didn't believe James Earl Ray acted alone, like I said earlier. Ray, he was a career criminal. He pleaded guilty to King's assassination, but later recanted. Martin Luther King's Jr. son, Dexter, met publicly with Ray in 1997 and argued for the case to be reopened. King's widow, Coretta Scott King, believed the mafia and local state and federal government agencies were deeply involved in the murder. She praised the results of the 1999 civil rights trial in which a Memphis jury decided an assassination was a result of a conspiracy and that Ray was set up to take the blame. So, James Earl Ray was a patsy, like I said earlier. A U.S. Department of Justice investigation released in 2000 reported no evidence of a conspiracy. They investigated themselves. There you have it.
King's mother was also slain by a bullet. On June 30th, 1974, a 69-year-old Alberta Williams King played the organ at a Sunday service inside Ebenezer Baptist Church. Marcus Wayne Tenault, Jr. rose from the front pew, drew two pistols, and began to fire shots. One of the bullets struck and killed King, who died steps from where her son had preached nonviolence. The deranged gunman said the Christians were his enemy and that although he had received divine instructions to kill King's father, who was in the congregation, he killed King's mother instead because she was closer. The shooting also left a church deacon dead. Chenault received a death penalty sentence that was later changed to life imprisonment, in part due to the King family's opposition to capital punishment. Boy, that family, I tell you, wow.
Yeah, like I said, I have the patience of Job. Number 10, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Cesar Chavez are the only other Americans to have had their birthday observed as a national holiday. In 1983, President Ronald Reagan signed a bill that created a federal holiday to honor King. The holiday, first commemorated in 1986, is celebrated on the third Monday in January, close to the civil rights leader's January 15th birthday. Those are the 10 things that we didn't know about without Martin Luther King, some facts.
Yep.
And that memorable speech, I don't know how old they were in 1968, but Robert F. Kennedy, the father, he gave this resounding speech when he announced the death of Martin Luther King. And he was campaigning in a southern state where a lot of black people were. And the name of his speech is "Mindless Minutes of Violence." you need to play the whole 10-minute full speech because it's well worth listening to. It's relevant for, you know, today, today's society, because we've never been so divided, you know, politically and in every which way I can think of. You know, so, you know, with that speech, Robert Kennedy Sr. Really galvanized and united people, whether you're black, white, rich, poor, whatever. So, you know, I'm going to play a speech here.
It is not a day for politics. I have saved this one opportunity, my only event of today, to speak briefly to you about the mindless menace of violence in America, which again stains our land and every one of our lives. It is not the concern of any one race. The victims of the violence are black and white, rich and poor, young and old, famous and unknown. They are most important of all, human beings, the mother human being, loved and needed. No one, no matter where he is or what he does, can be certain who next will suffer from some senseless act of bloodshed. And yet it goes on and on and on until you're ours. Why? What has violence ever accomplished? What has it ever created? No martyr's cause has ever been stilled by an assassin's bullet. No wrongs have ever been righted by riots and civil disorders. The sniper is only a coward, not a hero. And an uncontrolled or uncontrollable mob, it's only the voice of madness, not the voice of the people. Whenever any American's life is taken by another American unnecessarily, whether it is done in the name of the law or in defiance of the law, by one man or by a gang, in cold blood or in passion, in an attack of violence or in response to violence, whenever we tear at the fabric of our lives, which another man has painfully and clumsily woven for himself and his children, whenever we do this, then the whole nation is degraded. Among free men, said Abraham Lincoln, there can be no successful appeal from the ballot to the bullet. And those who take such appeal are sure to lose their case and pay the cost. Yet we seemingly tolerate a rising level of violence that ignores our common humanity and our claims to civilization alike. We calmly accept newspaper reports of civilian slaughter in far-off lands. We glorify killing on movie and television screens, and we call it entertainment. We make it easier for men from all shades of sanity to acquire weapons and ammunition they desire. Too often we honor swagger and bluster and the wielders of force. Too often we excuse those who are willing to build their own lives on a shattered dream among a human being. Some Americans who preach nonviolence abroad fail to practice it here at home. Some accuse others of rioting and inciting riots have by their own conduct invited them. Some look for scapegoats. Others look for conspiracy. But this much is clear. Violence breeds violence. oppression, greed, retaliation, and only a cleansing of our whole society can remove this sickness from our souls. For there is another kind of violence, slower, but just as deadly, destructive, the shot or the bomb in the night. This is the violence of institutions, indifference, inaction, and decay. This is the violence that afflicts the poor, that poisons relations between men because their skin is different colors. This is the slow destruction of a child by hunger, schools without books, and homes without heat in the winter. This is the breaking of a man's spirit by denying him the chance to stand as a father and as a man amongst other men. And this too lets us all. When you teach a man to hate and to fear his brother, when you teach that he is a lesser man because of his color or his beliefs, policies that he pursues, when you teach that those who differ from you threaten your freedom or your job or your home or your family, then you also learn to confront others, not as fellow citizens, but as enemies, to be met not with cooperation, but with conquest, to be subjugated, to be mastered. We learn at the last to look at our brothers and enemies, alien men with whom we share a city, not a community. Men bound to us in common wealth, but not in a common effort. We learn to share only a common fear, only a common desire to retreat from each other, only a common impulse. Make disagreement is for all this. There are no final answers for those of us who are American citizens. Yet we know what we must do, and that is to achieve true justice among our fellow citizens. The question is not what program we should seek to enact. The question is whether we can find in our own midst and in our own hearts that leadership of humane purpose that will recognize the terrible truths of our existence. We must admit the vanity of our false distinctions, the false distinctions among men. Learn to find our own advantage. Search for the advancement of all. We must admit to ourselves that our children's future cannot be built on the misfortune of another. We must recognize that this short life can neither be ennobled or enriched by hatred or by revenge. Our lives on this planet are too short. The work to be done is too great. Let this spirit flourish any longer in this land of ours. Of course, we cannot banish it with a program nor with a resolution. But we can perhaps remember, if only for a time, that those who live with us are our brothers, that they share with us the same short moment of life, that they seek, as do we, nothing but the chance to live out their lives in purpose and in happiness, winning what satisfaction and fulfillment that they can. Surely this bond of common fate, surely this bond of common goals, and begin to teach us something. surely we can learn at the least to look around at those of our fellow man. And surely we can begin to work a little harder to bind up the wounds among us and to become in our hearts brothers and countrymen once again. Tennyson wrote in Ulysses, that which we are, one equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will, to strive, to seek, to find, not to yield. Thank you very much.
This is Kitchen Politics 123. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico, and the topic tonight is, you know, GOP 2024, serving America BS on a biscuit and calling it caviar. The number to call, 515-605-9802. Hello, Elaine. Welcome to the show. What's cooking?
Oh, good. Good evening.
Hi, Elaine.
Mm-hmm. Hi. I wish they would... a happy birthday, Martin Luther King. I wish you were still here.
Yeah.
I really do. I hope that if there's any way to look down upon us and to guide us, please do it.
Yeah.
I am so sick of hearing about Iowa. I mean, announce it once, but don't dwell on it. And, Laurie, yesterday's program where you had said that media is dwelling on Trump, well, that's exactly what they're doing. There's no need to dwell on it. There is there's Iowa, fine, report it, and be done with it.
Yep. No,
I'm watching America's Got Talent, and they got a break in. It isn't earth-shaking. That's not earth-shaking news.
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's making me very, very upset and anxious because I feel that all of this media attention is actually showing the American people that he can win this election. I am telling you guys that this is going to flip in a bad way. Because people just don't understand what's going on. They don't see that it's been indicted 91 times. They don't understand the severity of what this man is capable of and what this man has done. They just don't see it. So every single day, we have to listen to this Iowa thing. 130,000 people showed up. The last time and the last election, do you know a 500,000 people showed up? What's 130,000 people? That's a little town. So don't make a big deal out of it. It's done. Mm-hmm. You know?
What makes Iowa so special?
What? Nothing.
Well, First in the Nation caucus. First in the Nation caucus.
Big deal. Okay, it's the First Nation caucus. Where they're going to have a caucus, announce who the candidates are, have the damn election, whether they do it by caucus or they do it by paper ballot, who cares?
Yeah.
And then when the 11 o'clock news comes on, announce who won what.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What they should have been dwelling on all day is Trump's trials.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
absolutely.
I guess in political history in America, it's tradition that, you know, you report. And with this 24-hour news cycle, you know, it's gotten worse. So Iowa, 40 delegates at stake. Trump, statewide, is projected winner with 52.2%. DeSantis next with 20.3%. Nikki Haley, 9%. Ramaswamy, 7.7%.
America's Got Talent on. That is just a regular TV station. Do they have to cut in during one of the acts?
I know. Mm-hmm. I think it's ridiculous.
No. No, they don't.
I don't, you know, I'll be honest.
I mean, Trump didn't trip over his hamburgers and fall flat on his face and squeeze a whole bunch of ketchup out. That might be national news. But this Iowa thing is not national news. Reported on 11 o'clock news.
Yep.
Well, like I say, it's tradition, you know. Every presidential year, Iowa,
I know
a new country.
Tradition, David, but they don't need to interrupt a regular broadcasted program.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yes, I know.
It's not.
Okay, if it's going to make you feel better, I'm going to say that, you know, Trump winning the Iowa caucus don't necessarily mean he's going to win a nomination, because Bob Dole won in 88. In 1992, it wasn't George H.W. Bush who won it. It was somebody else, I think Pat Robertson. You know, so, I mean, you know, Trump, I think his days are numbered in terms of his freedom and everything, with all these cases going on. Chris Sununu from New Hampshire, the governor of New Hampshire, Republican, said on NBC Meet the Press at least 2 months ago, probably 3 months ago now, that, you know, he's betting to his last dollar that Donald Trump will walk in the nominees. You know, so it's going to be really dirty in the Republican primaries. And Nikki Haley had to come through in New Hampshire. Nobody likes Nikki Haley. Nobody likes Ron DeSantis. Nobody likes any of them.
You know, no.
But the thing is, the reality is that, you know, some people want to hear what's going on, you know, because it's heating up. And we, being a political show, have to report these things and everything. But I get totally what you're saying, where, you know, your regular broadcasted show is on, you're enjoying it, and I cut it in for the Iowa Iowa caucuses, which nobody cares about, basically.
No,
you know, so
nobody really cares.
In the last 7 to 10 presidential caucuses, the winners have never been the nominee. So, you know, you're right. You have a point. It serves no purpose.
It'd be different if I had the TV on and it was on CNN or MSNBC or, you know, or C-SPAN. Okay, then I've got it on for that reason. But to interrupt my regular broadcasted program, it's getting to be it's getting to be too much. That's that's what I meant.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I want to clear my head too every once in a while. I really am getting sick and I want to hear other news. I want to hear how Japan is coping with their earthquakes. You know, big blurb on it, and then go to hell, Japan. No, I mean, this is getting to be too much. Too much Trump, Trump.
24/7.
Yeah,
it really
24/7.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if these cable networks have realized, but I think that a lot of people are getting turned off about it, and they're turning them off.
Yeah.
One would get the impression that they learned from 2015 and 2016, you want to give Trump so much free airtime, you know?
No.
It was just pushing it through the thing.
You're right.
And
no
matter how bad it is, where, you know, he makes fun of a woman and call them derogatory names or whatever, you know, Republicans, diehard Republicans, you know, still vote for him. You know, it's like disgusting. It's sickening. You know, it's just shameful. And the world is watching and seeing these Republicans vote for a man who lies and grabs women by the pussy and all these damn things. And they call themselves evangelical Christians. I mean, it's so disheartening and deluded and disgusting. You know?
Go on social media and you use the word pussy, which I got warned about it. I was talking about real live cats. I got warned about it. But, you know, it's okay for Trump and his creeps to talk like that.
I do too.
Anyways, is everybody enjoying this frigid weather?
Oh, it's beautiful here in Albuquerque. It was 47 degrees today, so there are heat waves going on. We'll complain.
It was 14 in my car today. My car was saying 14. So it was quite chilly today, to say the least. Next thing I think we need to talk about a little bit is I'd like to talk a little bit about the Central Park Five. I don't know if everyone knows the history of this or what happened to this, but, of course, Donald Trump got in the mix of this. And this is back in 1989. And it just goes to show you how racist he is and evil, even back in those days, 1989. So the story goes like this. 1989, five black and Latino boys were wrongfully convicted of raping a woman jogging in New York City. Leading the charge against them was a real estate mogul whose divisive rhetoric can be found in his presidential campaign today. And guess who that was? That was Donald Trump at that time. So we have Yusuf Salaman, a 15-year-old, when Donald Trump demanded his execution for a crime he did not commit. Nearly 3 decades before the rambunctious billionaire began his run for president, before he called for a ban on Muslims entering the United States for the expulsion of all undocumented migrants, before he branded Mexicans as racist and accused of mocking the disabled, Trump called for the reinstatement of the death penalty in New York following a horrific rape case in which five teenagers were wrongly convicted. The miscarriage of justice is widely remembered as a definitive moment in New York's fractured race relations. But Trump's intervention, he signed full-page newspaper advertisements implicitly calling the boys to die, has been gradually overlooked as his chances of winning the Republican nomination have rapidly increased. Now those involved in the case of the so-called Central Park Five and its aftermath say Trump's rhetoric served as an unlikely precursor to a unique brand of divisive populism that has powered his rise to political prominence in 2016. He was a fire starter, Salaman said of Trump, in his first extended interview since Trump announced his run for the White House. Common citizens were being manipulated and swayed into believing we were guilty. You can go ahead, David. This makes me so upset.
Yes,
I've already read it.
It was 1989. The crack epidemic had torn through New York as a poverty sword. The 25% of the city's elites reaped the rewards of a booming Wall Street. The murder rate had been risen to 1,896 killings a year. 3,254 rapes would be reported in five boroughs, but only one captured the city's extended attention and later exposed bias in its criminal justice system and media establishment. On the evening of April 19th, as 28-year-old investment banker Trishelle Maley was white, jogged across a northern, dilapidated section of Central Park, she was attacked, bludgeoned with a rock, gagged, tied, and raped. She was left for dead, but discovered hours later unconscious and suffering from hypothermia and severe brain damage. The New York Police Department believed they already had the culprits in custody. That same night, a group of more than 30 youths had entered the park from Eastern Harlem. Some engaged in a rampage of random criminality, hurling rocks at cars, assaulting and mugging passers-by. Among the group was Salam, along with 14-year-old Raymond Santana and Kevin Richardson, 15 years old, Antron McRae and 16-year-old Corey Wise. The teenagers, four African-Americans and one Hispanic, would become collectively known as the Central Park Five. They would later deny any involvement in criminality that night, But as they were rounded up and interrogated by the police at length, they said they were forced into confessing to a rape. Quote, recalling Salam, I would hear them beating up Corey Wise in the next room. They would come and look at me and say, you realize you're next. The fear made me feel really like I was not going to be able to make it out, end quote. So four of the boys sang confessions and appeared on video without a lawyer, each arguing that while they had not been the individual to commit the rape, they had witnessed one of the others do it, thereby implicating the entire group. The city erupted. The case came to embody not only fears that accompanied dramatic rise in violent crimes in New York, but also its perceived racial dynamics. The case of a black woman raped the same day in Brooklyn by two men who threw her from the roof of a four-story building received little media attention. Just 2 weeks after the Central Park attack, before any of the boys had faced trial and were, while Mealy remained critically ill in a coma, Donald Trump, whose office was on Fifth Avenue, commanding an exquisite view of the park's opulent southern frontier, intervened. He paid a reporter $85,000 to take over advertisement space in four of the city's newspapers, including the New York Times. Under the headline, Bring Back the Death Penalty, Bring Back Our Police, and above his signature, Trump wrote, and I quote, I want to hate these muggers and murderers. They should be forced to suffer. When they kill, they should be executed for their crimes. They must serve as an example so that others will think long and hard before committing a crime or an act of violence, end quote. Salam, now 41, cannot remember exactly where he was when he first saw the ads. He had no idea who Trump was. I knew that this famous person calling for us to die was very serious, Salam recalled. We were all afraid. Our families were afraid. Our loved ones were afraid. For us to walk around as if we were a target on our backs, that's how things were, end quote. So all five minors had already been paraded in front of the cameras, had their names and addresses published, and Salam said he and his family received more death threats after the papers ran Trump's full-page screed. On a daytime TV show 2 days later, a female audience member called for the boys to be castrated and echoed the calls for the death penalty if Mealy died. Pat Buchanan, the former Republican White House aide, called for the oldest of the group, Wise, to be tried, convicted, and hung in Central Park by June 1st. Had this been the 1950s, that's sick type of justice that they wanted, somebody from the darker place of society would have most certainly came to our homes, dragged us from our beds, and hung us from the trees in Central Park. It would have been similar to what they did to Emmett Till, Salam said. All five boys pleaded not guilty at the trial the following year. The prosecution's case rested almost entirely on the confession they had given shortly after the incident. As would become crucial later on, there was no DNA evidence linking any of them to the crime scene, and Mealy, who made a miraculous recovery and testified in court, could not remember any details of the attack. The jury found all five boys guilty. The court condemned them to prison to serve sentences ranging from 5 to 10 years, 5 to 15 years. Wise, who had remained in the city's notorious Rikers Island jail, was sentenced as an adult. Michael Warren, a veteran New York civil rights lawyer who'd later come to represent the Central Park Five, was certain that Trump's advertisement played a role in securing conviction. And I quote, said Warren, he poisoned the minds of many people who lived in New York and who rightfully had a natural affinity for the victim. Notwithstanding jurors' assertions that they could be fair and impartial, some of them or their families, who naturally have influence, had to be affected by the inflammatory rhetoric in the ad. So the spokeswoman for Trump's campaign declined to comment. Of course. For many who have studied Trump's rise to prominence, the Central Park case provided an early glimpse into how his racially charged views entered his political and tactical mindset. Up to this day, Donald Trump, even though the DNA evidence wasn't there that these five boys did, but, you know, were accused of, you know, he still refuses to apologize. And these motherfuckers in Iowa, the evangelical movement, you know, voted for this man in the caucus.
No, he has never apologized. He ruined five boys' lives, basically. Mm. He played judge and jury when he paid $85,000 to have articles in the paper. Why was that even allowed? Why wasn't this case thrown out of court? He ruined their lives. Actually, he didn't. They did get out of prison, and we can go on with their story on another night, but their lives now are better. But he did ruin their lives, and they're scarred for life 30-some years later. The son of a bitch, orange monster, son of a bitch, is still running free. He is still lying. He is still ruining people's lives, and he's still freaking running free.
And he was convicted of rape recently with the Eugene Kyle case. The jury awarded him $5 million. And then he continued saying that, you know, defamatory things against Eugene Carroll. So it's back in court, and he's going to get sued again. So this rat bastard just don't learn, you know. And, you know, he thinks he's untouchable. He thinks he's a gangster. Well, he's not. And sooner or later, God forbid, well, I better not say it on here, but you know what I'm thinking. You know, let's just say I hope he chokes on a McDonald's and dies. How about that?
Yeah.
That's the prettiest way I can put it. You know, this man, you know, he has a penchant for, you know, instigating violence. Look what he did in January 6th, that speech. You know, go down there, you know, march down with you on Capitol Hill, and we're going to take back our democracy. You know, section, section 14, clause 3 of the Constitution, it's clear that if you incite riots, if you instigate anything against the United States government, then you're not eligible for office. Cut and dry case. So why is the Supreme Court lagging? You know, why is there lawsuits in the courts saying that, oh, he should be on Colorado ballot, he should be on Nevada's ballot? Come on, no. He disqualified himself on January 6, 2021. You know? White privilege. Plain and simple. It's disgusting. And this is why we can have nice things on America, because of people like Donald Trump, that sick, arrogant, twisted freak. You know?
He knew what he was doing. He absolutely knew when he was what he was doing when he took out that ad. He knew what he was doing by taking it. He knew what he was aligning himself with, white law and order, because he's freaking racist on top of everything else. Everything else. How many lives ruined? How many people has he not paid for things that he had done for him in his home, in his buildings, in his offices? People have screwed in his life. Many, many people. Probably hundreds.
Figuratively and literally. Figuratively and literally, he screwed people in life.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, so 2 years before the Central Park case, Trump briefly considered a run for president for that most dismissed as a naked attempt to draw publicity for his book, The Art of the Deal. And it was released later that year in 1987. And he takes credit for the book, but we all know that he has a ghostwriter because Trump is too stupid to even put two or three sentences together. That makes sense. So, you know, he couldn't resist the opportunity to speak in New Hampshire at an invitation of the Portsmouth Republican Committee, using a platform to single out allies in Saudi Arabia and Japan while critiquing U.S. foreign policy in the Persian Gulf. That was back in 1987. He employed the same tactics as he would in 1989, publishing a full-page ad, the three America's biggest newspaper that called for the U.S. to impose taxes on allies, whom he urged were taking advantage of the United States. You know, so in February 2000, when Trump was again flirting with a run for the White House, he took out anonymous ads in local upstate New York newspapers in an effort to shut down a rival casino backed by a group of Native Americans. You know, again, racism. Beneath a picture of needles and drug paraphernalia, the ad stated, and I quote, Are these new neighbors we want? And it added, the St. Regis Mohawk Indian record of criminal activity is well documented, end quote. How can you do that? That's so racist and vile and disgusting. So Trump later apologized, at least the Indians, the Native Americans, not an apology. These five youths didn't. In his biography, he argued the incident underlined a willingness to use rhetoric that other people won't use under the guise of talking straight. You know? And this is now a fixture of his campaign trail, where, you know, he says things that are false and blatantly lie and call out. But he still does it, no matter what damage it does. So after declaring his campaign announcement that Mexico was bringing crime and rapists to the United States, Trump quickly seized on a murder case of a 32-year-old white woman in San Francisco, in which an undocumented Mexican migrant was a chief suspect. He was since frequently condoned and incited violence against protesters at his rallies, and he has vowed to bring back waterboarding as of terrorist suspects. You remember the United Nations say that, you know, waterboarding is not allowed. It's against the Geneva Convention. But, you know, Trump don't really give a damn because he has no respect for nothing. He enjoys torture. Well, listen to him speak is torture enough. So in reference to our promise to issue an executive order to mandatory execute anyone in the United States who kill a police officer, he said, and I quote, "We just can't afford anymore to be so politically correct." So, you know, whatever reason where a police officer is killed in the line of duty, that person who did the killing should be himself or herself then be killed. So an eye for an eye. So is that Christian? I want to ask the Iowa voters there. Is that Christian? Would Jesus do that? And you vote for this man?
Yeah.
Good Lord Almighty. What does America come to?
I know.
515-605-9802, the number to call. Say your first name, where you're calling from. Hello, welcome to the Kitchen Politics 123 show. What's cooking?
This is from Flint. Doris from Flint. I just called in, so I just caught the end of what you're talking about. And I'm just listening.
Yes, you're talking about the racism and the violence of Donald Trump. The Central Park Five.
He never apologized. Thought they should be executed, right?
So what's your take on it, really? Back in 1989, it happened.
Yeah. Well, the whole point is, he didn't give any thought and talk about execution, and they were all innocent, ultimately. And he wrote five or so many pages, full pages, about bring back the execution. He's never, never, never apologized, which is not a strong man. It's a very weak man.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he did not.
Mm-hmm.
He's
mm-hmm.
never apologized to them. He basically ruined their lives. He really did. He ruined their lives. I mean, they are all still alive, and they're all still, you know, going amongst her, but they have PSG. What is that called? PTSD.
PTSD.
And that, I'm sure I think it was Jamal Solom or something. He's the one who ran for something on the board in New York, and he's got a PhD, and he's like the gentlest sounding soul you could meet. And, you know, we've never even, you know, when Trump said that Obama wasn't a citizen, he's dropped that. But the point is, he never brought anything back. What kind of people support someone that just doesn't have to do anything? That tells me a lot about them, unfortunately.
Back in 1989, Trump was quoted as saying, "I've got a black accountant at Trump Castle and Trump Plaza. Black guys counting my money. I hate it. The only kind of people I want counting my money are short guys that wear yarmulkes every day." So he's outwardly racist. He admitted
that he
said this. You know, so, you know, and these evangelicals who call themselves Christian.
Correct.
Would
I
Jesus
so
vote for an asshole like Trump? It's sickening.
Yeah.
How sick are these people?
They're sick. Yep. And they're all, you know what, I've gotten religious. I know people that are devout lives and lives, but they're not waving a flag. So I figured, first time I think when I see an American flag, is I think they're probably a Trumper, and more likely they are.
I do, too.
They cover things up with these soul sacred symbols, and some people are easily to swallow it. Because a lot of times those flags are on these big trucks. Big trucks. So I've never lived in a time where people seem so, and I don't believe they all think that he lost, that he won the election. Now, there's some, because some people just aren't too swift, or they're willingly corrupt. But a lot of people know he won it, just like what they knew on Fox. That's why Fox was effectively sued for it. So they're willing to lie or to deny it, because if Johnny gets in the cookie jar, he's got crumbs all around his mouth, and his mommy asks Johnny, did you get in the cookie jar? He's going to say no.
Mm-hmm.
Do I believe Johnny doesn't know he got in the cookie jar? No, he knows.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, he's trying to protect himself. And on an adult level, it's much more corrupt and venal and terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting, Donald Trump over the years have gotten worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's emboldened.
Yeah. One last thing I wanted to finish up with. The reputation of the group, the Central Park Five, was restored when in June of 2002, a convicted murderer and a serial rapist named Matthias Reyes was then already serving a life sentence for other crimes, admitted to the rape of Maley. His DNA was subsequently matched to genetic material recovered from the scene. After their convictions were formally vacated, the five wrongly convicted men filed a civil suit against the city, which settled in 2014, reported $41 million. In 2016, the men received an additional $3.9 million settlement from the New York State Court of Claims. Now, you have to remember, the $41 million, their lawyers took a third from the top.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take away a third from $41 million, that's a lot of money. But still, they did get something, you know, and it still isn't enough, I'll be honest, for five people to divide $41 million, less a third, that wasn't a lot of money. It really wasn't.
Nope.
They should have gotten
and
41
years of your life. Who would take 10 years of their life locked up to get that money?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And not only that, it took away their youth. It took away their ability to go to college. It destroyed them, honestly and truly. It's horrific. And that man, that SOB, that orange monster, could care less. He took out full page and paid money, $85,000, to the newspaper to put in full page ads, basically saying how guilty they were with no proof. And shame on the newspaper for running those ads with no proof as well.
Well, you know, the thing is, nobody, you know, when you ask these people, Trumpers generally, I have a conversation, and the point is, they'll say, well, I don't like his, I don't like everything about him, or I don't like his ways. That's how they preface what they're going to say. But I like his policies, and I think, well, damn, what policies are you talking about? You didn't tell me anything when you said I like his policies, and they never go into detail. They walk away. You can't really have a conversation because policies doesn't tell me anything. What is it that you liked? I say, did you like it when he said grab people by the pussy? It wasn't illegal, but it's, you know what? The time that Trump, when I already knew about him before this, the time he made fun of a journalist who had a withered arm and made a face about it, I would know that man is no one I would ever vote for, because he lacks integrity, he lacks humanity, he lacks any dignity, and I don't need to have him commit a crime, although he has. But a lot of things that are terrible in the world are not crimes in terms of impact on other people. It's awful.
Mm-hmm.
Just awful. And they don't talk about it. Once he's passed the Obama, you know, that's all passed. Why didn't they go up and say, you know, but they don't answer, but no one's pushed him. Well, what about that? Did you ever find it? You said you were bringing it back, and you never brought it back.
So is it hidden somewhere? I mean, you should not push people like that. The media is a little bit of a problem. There are some that are really good, like Ayman Mohedin, Ali Valshi, and some others. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them do not push. They just like, what was her name? You know, the woman that's on the Sunday show now, she took over where I think Russert used to be, maybe.
Oh, yes. Meet the Press. Kristen Welker.
Kristen Welker, yeah. She was talking with, trying to think, was it to Trump she was talking with? I don't know if that was the one where, and they showed this, he could have responded and pushed him a bit. And a lot of journalists don't do that. That's not how a journalist would be. Some of the best journalists, they will pursue it. They're still civil and so on. But when he said this thing, you know, grab him by the pussy and all that, what did you mean by that? And he says, well, it's true. It's been the case for a million years. Okay, a million years, really. And you're back to the Neanderthal time. And maybe it was maybe that's a good thing. It depends. He goes every which way. Well, maybe it was a good thing, maybe a bad thing. Depends on, you know, whatever. And that's it. That's the discussion. And the people that are supporting him have sold their souls because they're hanging on to somebody who, through his decrepitness, wins over people, and they want to be with them. I wouldn't want to be on this side in a second. And that, what does that tell me about them? That's what bothers me.
Because if they're on fire, listen, Joyce, if they're on fire, Trump wouldn't piss on them or give them water, nothing. He doesn't care. He doesn't give a goddamn about these people. But yet still, with the hard-earned money, they donate to him. And it's illegal because, you know, he's using that campaign money, campaign donations, to defend himself in court. And I hope Jack Smith really beats his ass over that, you know, because, you know, that's not right. That's campaign abuse, campaign violation, you know?
What kind of person who says he's so rich has to ask people for money and then he uses it for himself, just like he did from his so-called charity that he never put any money in, but he took money out and had to shut it down and pay a fine, like his university that was fraudulent and had to shut it down, pay a fine. I mean, that tells me a lot about neighbors. There are neighbors around that live around me that I think, my God, these are real people that are in our midst. And they often are themselves Christians, which is a blasphemy of Jesus. It's a blasphemy of Jesus because it's saying that they're acting out basically what Jesus would want, which is a blasphemy because they certainly aren't.
We'll spend more than half the show speaking about Donald Trump. So moving on now to the Rio Grande, where two children and a woman drowned and is on the U.S.-Mexico border days after Texas brought the feds amid migrant crisis. According to CNN, three migrants, a woman and two children, drowned in the Rio Grande in Eagle Pass, Texas. Very recently, the epicenter of the migrant crisis, just days after state authorities brought United States Border Patrol from accessing miles of the U.S.-Mexico border in that area. And, you know, according to Henry Cooler, he's a Democrat from Texas, he said on Twitter recently, quote, this is a tragedy and the state bears responsibility. So Border Patrol learned six immigrants were in distress in the Rio Grande at about 9 p.m. on Friday. And the Border Patrol officials called the Texas Military Department and the Texas National Guard and the Texas Department of Public Safety, but were unsuccessful in relaying the information by phone. So Congressman Queller, I hope I'm getting that right, said in a social media post that federal agents then went to the gate at a Shelby Park, a city park in the Rio Grande, blocked off by state authorities with fencing, gates, and razor wire to provide the information. The congressman later on went on to say on Twitter, however, a Texas Military Department soldier stated they would not grant access to the migrants, even in the event of an emergency, and that would send a soldier to investigate the situation. So three migrants, bodies were recovered by Mexican authorities early Saturday, and though the exact time is unclear, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security confirmed deaths and said Border Patrol agents were stopped from assisting at the border.
Yep.
So the mere people drone.
Yep. Exactly.
And that's the idea that these hordes are coming across the border. I wrote to a relative, and I learned recently he's a relative, but anyway, he was talking about the same way Trump does, because he's ignorant, basically. And I wrote back to him, you know, in terms of the greatest threat to our country is not from south of the border. It's American, usually white male citizens that are violent, that are these Proud Boys, that are the K-types, the racists, the all that kind of white supremacists, national Christian, whatever. Those are the ones, and I said, we should look at who did all these, when you look at all the school shootings, show me somebody that ran over the border and that did these shootings. In fact, somebody drove across the country to shoot Mexicans coming in a Texas town, I think it was. You know, I think that's where, what's his name, who ran for president lives anyway. And I said, and you know, really, the fact that so many people are desperate coming here, unfortunately, some of the reasons are that this country helped undermine their own country to make it less safe, which is true. And they're running away and they're coming here, but nobody ever talks about that. And when people are desperate, they go pay money or risk themselves and their children to come to the border. And there's these predators there, or we all know about them because they talk about them. They can get raped. They pay money. They may not do what they do, but they're not coming across the border. They're getting them before they get across the border, those that are seeking to come to the border. And I said from all the data that I've seen is if you look at per capita, illegal or legal immigrants all combined commit less crimes like they're talking about than white American. It could be non-white, but basically – these white American, I said, even the 9/11, which at that time was the worst attack on our country we'd had since a long time, I said, the people that did that weren't illegal. They were legally here on visas, and they didn't come from south of the border. They came from the east, and they flew over and blew those planes into the – and I said, they were legal. They were legal. And so I said, can you come back with some data that shows something other than what I'm saying? You know, anyway, it's true that the biggest threat are these people in the United States. If you look at the shooting of the gay club in Florida, and you look across, who did it? You say, oh, here's an illegal immigrant that did this. I haven't heard that that's a big problem.
Go ahead.
Okay, Joyce brought up a good point. She's brought up the school shootings. How about the school shooting, which is still hot? Teacher just passed away. The young boy was in the sixth grade, so he couldn't have been more than maybe 10 years old. Now, the caucuses are in Iowa. The shooting was in Iowa. Why wasn't the press interviewing the people that were connected with that school shooting and finding out how they felt?
Not a word.
They didn't go interview those people and say, well, what do you think about the Iowa caucuses? Would you vote for Haley? Would you vote for Ramaswamy? Would you vote for Trump? No, there was no interviews like that.
That's the media.
I want all covered. Hold on. Wasn't it 2-3 days ago that Trump was the one who said that we should get over it and move on?
Yes.
And this fucker wants to be president of the United States.
Yeah.
And some of these people voted for this asshole. Help me understand. Help me understand this. Are they that stupid? That inbred, that backward, to vote for a man who don't give a fuck. Basically, he said he doesn't give a fuck. Let's move on. I mean, Jesus Christ.
That
Iowa,
is what he said.
Are you that fucking stupid?
He said it's sad. He said it's sad, and I quote, but we have, let's move on. It's over, basically. Who gives a shit? You know, nothing can remember. You remember when Ford pardoned Nixon, That didn't go over well for that Republican Party. That was not a big win, because to move on and they'll say, the country can't handle it, I say, you didn't ask me, I can handle it. And if you believe no one is above the law, we can't handle it, you're sadly mistaken. We can handle it.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to become president if you get away with stuff.
That's the only reason that he wants to be president, so he doesn't have to go to prison. That is the only reason. He doesn't care about anything else. He doesn't care about the country. He doesn't care about people. He only cares about himself. Like David said, I wish he'd choke on a McDonald's. Why can't he do that? Oh,
well,
now,
if he did,
I wanted to ask you something.
I wanted to say, choke, we just say how sad. His family must miss him. That's it.
You know, yeah. I just wanted to ask you something. Can I ask you something, Doris? We were talking earlier how we think that Trump is on television and the news media, in the news media, 24/7. And it's actually hurting the country, and it's actually helping him, and it's hurting President Biden. Because President Biden is in the background all the time, working day in and day out, doing things for the country, doing things for people. Every single day, that man, 7 days a week. And we have Trump. We have to look at that bastard every single day, listen to him talk every single day, and look at what is created in this country. So I think the media, do you think the media is at fault as well?
Well, the media, the point is, if they work for some station or something, they may tell them to hold back. So then if they do that, they can't be the journalist that they should be. I'll tell you, Richard Engel was over in the West Bank. He's been in places, he's been kidnapped. You know, he's been in these places where war is going on, just like Christopher Hedges has been.
Right.
Most people don't know him. But anyway, he's been to places, and he was over there in the West Bank. And it was on,
right.
I didn't see it on the TV. I had my radio on, and it was a car approaching, and there was a woman, a settler, who was pushing this Palestinian, and Engel came to the Palestinian guy. It's his home. That's where they've lived. And they're pushing him off the land, and this car came up, and it's military uniforms with no names, okay? Because, in fact, the military is often there on the West Bank supporting it, and if you really get anybody in the administration to answer it, I'm just saying this is true for everything that I've read or heard. They will say something, because I've heard it like, well, they're not following the law. That's all they can say, because they don't want to say, well, actually, it's part of our practice, whether or not it's the law. We're letting them do that. And he said that the woman that was there, this particular woman, said, you know, I don't care. You know, I care about my people. I don't care about these people who hurt or killed my people. I'm sure that Palestinian in that house didn't hurt or kill her people. But that means a broad brush. That means a broad brush the Palestinians. And Rashida Tlaib has a video where she's quoting officials in Israel saying, we ought to drop a nuclear bomb on that, or all kinds of things that are talking about roaches, and they've been documented. And she had that put into the congressional record. Well, our media isn't covering those things, because if that's our ally and they can do whatever they want, which from every instance, why wouldn't you become an elitist and become like the brat that a child would become if you let them get away with everything without any accountability? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I know.
But anyway, Richard Engel is a good journalist.
Yes, I know. He is great. I really admire him. But I did read that President Biden is getting very fed up with Israel, you know, and because they're not stopping, they're destroying, and I think pretty soon he's come to a decision.
Well, you know,
I think President Biden is
Gaza.
Going to come to.
It's about time.
Pardon?
They've almost like most of Gaza killed. Now they think it's 30,000 people because there's a lot under the rubble. And as I said, almost half of them are children, but they don't care. And when you've done all that destruction, are we going to do something now after all that has happened? And they didn't let aid in, and they didn't let water come in, because Israel didn't open a lot of channels for aid to get in. And people were starving.
they're dying of thirst, getting disease, and we let that happen, and shame on our government.
Well, Doris, we cannot let that happen. I mean, we only have so much control. I mean, I have to say that. That's the way I feel. We only have so much control. I mean,
oh,
we can't tell Israel
You're right, Lori. But we pay them. We give them money. We give them money.
Yes, we
that's
do.
Control.
Well,
that's the kind of control.
We have to give them, yes, we give them money, but, I mean, we always have given them money. But they should respect our thoughts. Follow what I'm saying? They should respect President Biden when he tells them, you know, you need to stop, you know, ceasefire, you need to stop. I think he's coming to the end of his rope with him, and I think pretty soon we're going to see something else. Because I honestly believe also, and I don't know if you guys all believe this, you can say it, but I think this might hurt him with his election. What do you guys think about that?
It might hit Biden, her Biden, you mean?
Yes. Yes, with the presidential
election.
Oh, yeah,
election. Right, because a lot of people, a lot of young people, I'm 80. I mean, I'm fed up myself. The point is, when they see it, young people often have a little different viewpoint, and they look at it, and you see it with your eyes, and this is the first time in my lifetime that I think the world has seen what is going on so up front and personal in Gaza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're appalled.
David, what do you think? David, do you think that this could be hurting his campaign, could hurt his campaign,
well,
I should say?
Definitely, definitely, because this country is so anti-Muslim. There are so many Islamophobics that are out there. And Trump is pushing the rhetoric, the hateful rhetoric, you know. I'm not saying that Jews don't have their set of problems. They have a right to exist. However, what they're doing now, bombing the crap out of Gaza, what is that accomplishing? Killing babies, killing pregnant women, killing sick people,
that's
killing the elderly. Not a goddamn thing. So they're trying to push these people off the land to steal the land.
Yeah.
The United States will pay billions of dollars yearly in their defense, in their free education. So if they can get our money and have free education, free healthcare, and you know, defense training and the best weapons and all, why shouldn't we have a state that says, hey, Israel, cut the shit out, you know? And me saying this, I'm not anti-Semitic, okay?
I'm not
either. I have some Jewish blood in me. On my mother's side. So I'm not anti-Semitic. You know, to criticize Israel is not anti-Semitic. While Dolai is...
Not the government. The government is the problem.
The
a lot of Jews in Israel and a lot... There are Jewish sects that are anti-Zionist. Most people don't know that. There are Jewish sects that are anti-Zionist. Many Jews that aren't in a sect that are anti-Zionist. And many people in the world that are anti-Zionist. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz either introduced or supported a bill that went through the House and got, I want to look up who voted for it, but part of it was, the thing that bugged me was to say that anti-Zionist equals anti-Semitic. That's not true.
Exactly.
Zionist
crap, you know? Anti-Zionism.
Yeah,
Zionists are pieces of shit. Let's just put it out there. You know, Israel deserves to exist. But Zionism is shit. It's racist. It's wrong. And what means the Palestinians are wrong. You know? And me saying that, I'm not anti-Semitic. If you think that,
no,
fuck
you're not.
You.
No, you're not. Maybe
no, not you. Not you, but people out there listening, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I know.
There's one more thing that I want to, David, I just sent this to you. Bernie Sanders was interviewed on Sunday. And he was asked, well, not asked, but he thinks that President Biden has to change course with his reelection campaign. And it kind of goes, well, Senator Bernie Sanders on Sunday said it was very hard for most Americans, especially young people, to be excited about what's going on in the world amid President Biden's bid for reelection. Anchor Jake Tapper asked Sanders on CNN State of the Union if Biden has seriously damaged his standing among young progressives who have criticized the U.S.'s position on the Israel-Hamas war. Sondra said, while most people will likely still back Biden, many have concerns about his handling of the ongoing conflict. He said that former President Trump, the front runner of the GOP primary, is the one of the most dangerous, and I quote, political figures in modern American history. So I think people end up rallying around Biden, but there is no question. It is very hard for young people, I think most Americans, to be excited about what's going on right now. The president has got to change course, he said, and I quote. Sondra's also called on Biden to maintain pressure on his, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over his concerns that indiscriminate bombing is taking place in Gaza. Biden Biden has asked Netanyahu over and over again to change course, Sondra said. Netanyahu just yesterday, no, we're going to continue doing what we are doing. And that is correct. Unacceptable. You cannot give billions of dollars to a country that ignores your wishes and violates international law. That is what Bernie said. So
Bernie's a Jew yes. who's a non-violent,
exactly.
by the way.
Yes. So I would hope that the president follows through on his concerns and to say to Netanyahu that this is unacceptable. You are not getting a nickel more from the United States unless you radically change course, Sondra's added. And I agree with him. I agree with him.
Sure.
I agree with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, that was
Yeah, and added to which, the kids who got arrested a couple of years back, Naz from Atlanta, Georgia, was telling us the last show that what happened in front of the White House where they're burning stuff and, you know, people are getting arrested because they're protesting and everything, you know. I mean, you have to learn your history. You know, what are you protesting? Turn against Biden and not vote or vote for a third party candidate. That's given all the strength of Trump. You may as well vote Donald Trump, you know. Also what a douchebag he is, you know. And when things go wrong, so oh no, you know, oh my God, what is going on in America? You know, it's people like those responsible.
That's what the kids don't understand. Netanyahu is just like Trump. With Hamas as a way for him to get away with all the crap he's been pulling on his people.
Exactly.
Netanyahu, they're good friends. He likes Kim Jong-un. He likes Putin. I mean, I thought we must be really either a lot of corrupt people, which is, I guess there must be, to really somehow find a reason. It's like, to me, it's like saying this. You know, I didn't quite like the guy's personality and some quirks about him, but Hitler, I got more $10 back in my taxes, some crap like that. When you overlook what is a horrific part of them and say, you know, I wasn't crazy about that, but I liked it. They say his policies, and I say, okay, I don't know what you mean. Can you tell me what you mean by what policies? How about this? Mm-hmm. How about that? But you never get that extended conversation because they won't do it.
Because they won't admit racists and bigots.
Correct.
They're racists and bigots, just like Donald Trump. They have hate in their heart and their head, just like Donald Trump. That is the agenda that they're talking about, but they don't want to admit it to you.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to. We already know that. I mean, if you like, you know, you can say, I like Hitler. Some people did, actually. I always wonder what Lindbergh and a lot of these other people thought, if anything, after it turned out what he was doing. But I'd like a book written on that. Oh, by the way, this is what he did. How do you like him now? I don't know. And I guess there's the King of England who stepped down. He liked him too.
Now, of all the rotten things that Hitler did, you should remember, there still was a third of the people that believed what Hitler did was right.
Well, that's the point. Some of the people were okay with that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a scary thing because, sometimes I start from my values and I finally, everything makes sense when I realize we don't share the same values. That's all makes sense now.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter. So I stopped scratching my head because I figured out the answer. We're not in the same box.
Mm-hmm. So Doris and Laurie and Elaine, if Martin Luther King Jr. were alive today at 95 years old, what do you think he would think of America today? Starting with Laurie.
He would shake his head in despair and say, all the work that I've done, all the suffering that I went through is basically come full circle, and it's really not any much better. Not much better.
That's for sure. The point is, I do think we can win if we get the people out, because this sort of a cartoon I saw, it showed this one group on the left, they call them Republicans. This other group on the right, they're about the same size. And in the middle, there's like twice as many who aren't anything, and they don't vote, and they're saying, what good is my vote? I'm only one person. Well, you're like twice the number of any one of those parties.
Mm-hmm.
It's to get them to realize that. And you have to talk to them personally often to do that. Because, I talk to people. I'm a doctor. I talk to patients about stuff. And I say them things that they did not know, simple things, because I'm kind of an animal about politics, because I just know politics is what's happening out there by other people. And so you want to know what they're doing to you and not wait till you get swapped. They don't know. And when I tell them things, that they're really uninformed. That's what I mean. They're uninformed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just wide open. And some of them say, I didn't know that. I said, well, you think about that.
But Doris, in this day and age when, information is just a computer click away on Google search, why are people so uninformed? That's scary as hell. They'd rather watch the Kardashians and some idiotic reality show than look at something that will affect them daily. Voting.
Well, of course, that's going to be good for the right-wing types, because the more ignorant and uninformed you are, the more they can, get away with. And I'm thinking, look, they have kind of, they wanted to do away with the education department. So Trump wanted to do all these things, and that would serve the purpose of the gullible or the ones that have the ease to be corrupted. I call it that, their ease to be corrupted. We are not the highest in the world in much of anything, maybe arms, maybe military, the military, and I'm trying to think, mass killings. That's where we are high.
Right.
These other countries have health care in terms of all these other issues. They're much better.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't even know where we are. I think it's...
And a prison industrial complex as well.
And the universe.
The prison industrial complex as well, Doris.
What's
that
again?
The prison industrial complex. The prison industrial complex is also a big thing. It's modern day slavery, basically. If a black man or a brown skinned person commits a crime and the white person commits the very same crime, the white person gets a slap on the wrist and probation for a year, while the black person and a brown person get 10, 15, 20 years.
There's a woman who wrote a book on that. I'm trying to think of her name. Black woman attorney wrote a book on that. And after I got through 20 pages, I thought, what more can she say? when you look at the numbers and the crimes, because that's what you do when you try to compare. Most people can't do that on their own in their spare time. Somebody has to research. I can't think of her name, but a lawyer, if you wrote the black woman lawyer who wrote a book about the criminal justice system and the inequality in and of itself. Just the fact that crack was a higher, you got more jail time and punishment for crack than cocaine. But who used crack?
Did you know, Doris and everybody, in 1988, when the CIA and the government came to South Central Los Angeles, they had a town hall meeting. And it was revealed that the CIA was responsible for spreading crack in the black community.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
Evidence.
Yep.
And then, and nothing came of it. Nobody went to prison. You know, it happened in the Reagan administration. You know, so there again, you know, it's just a money-making thing to make black people suffer and to make brown people suffer. And let's start saying no to drugs when it starts affecting white families, you know?
Right.
And this whole thing, fentanyl, that's happening now, you know, in New Mexico, I have a big fentanyl problem, even around the country, where, you know, it's affecting, you know, white people now. So, oh, Lord, we have to do something about fentanyl. So when fentanyl and crack and heroin was there, you know, assaulting the black family and the brown family and immigrant families or whatever, we didn't give a damn.
Yeah.
But once it started affecting white people now in affluent communities, oh, yes, we'll have to do something about this. Yeah. Yeah, Marjorie Taylor Greene, to our spirit in the perch.
Correct.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Reagan's the one that before the election happened, you know, he was, you know, we had these hostages over there that were taken by Iranians. Right? By the way, Iranians were, the Iranian government was a democracy in 1953. And who helped overthrow that?
Mm-hmm.
The United States and England not only overthrew the Democratic prime minister, but then second undemocratic thing, they installed the Shah of Iran, who was a brutal dictator, but he wasn't into religion.
Exactly.
And then when the revolution finally came around, who won? The Ayatollah. So you get, went from a democracy to a religious dictatorship.
Theocracy.
And that we got
theocracy.
That going. And we should learn about that. People don't know about that.
Mm-hmm. And the reason why immigrants from Central America, South America, and the Caribbean and the African diaspora are coming to America is because during the Cold War, what was happening is that sides were being taken. These places were third world countries that were used as pawns in the Cold War, you know, and after the Cold War was ended in 1989 with the dissolution of the Soviet Union in 1990, Christmas Day, you know, America's like, oh, okay, for hell with you. I don't really care about you. Pack up and left.
Yeah.
You know, and so
yeah.
These people, these governments that the United States put in place, you know, who were leaning towards America and not pro-Soviet, they treated their people like garbage. And any dissident who go against them, Fulgencio Pinochet, Pinochet in Chile, for example, I'm having this bad feedback. I don't know why. Pinochet in Chile, where that went 30,000 feet up in the air, and throughout dissidents who disagreed Pinochet, without parachute, over 300,000 people cannot be found during the Pinochet administration. Why? Because they disagreed with them, and America knew what was happening. The CIA knew what was happening. Well, because Pinochet, you know, that, oh, Pinochet may be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch.
Correct.
You know?
Correct. Same with the Shah of Iran.
And now all these immigrants coming to America, you know, and, oh, they're not white, so stay out. Oh, Haitians coming by boat? No, send them back. Send them back, they get murdered. You know, this country is something else. I'm sorry. You know, we can do better than this.
We've got to put up a graft, and we have to figure out exactly where the Republicans were in place when all this was happening. They were either the president or they were controlling the House and the Senate.
Right.
Are you following what I'm saying? Because that was brought up to me, that the Republicans, whether we had a Democratic president or not, the Republicans have been in power enough to manipulate everything they want. And I think we just need to put up a big graft and figure it out and present it to the people. Because I'm sitting here thinking about that. You know, you're bringing up all the times that these dictators have been backed, and I'm trying to put these years together, and I'm trying to remember who was where.
Well, you know,
an example that stands out in recent history, 1989 in Panama, when Manuel Noriega, went up there on stage with a machete, a very sharp machete, slammed it down saying, "I have George Bush by the balls." And George H.W. Bush didn't like that. And he was, what's his name, Panama Canal was being controlled. The drugs were coming in and out by the CIA and, you know, and Manuel Noriega was controlling things. So Bush, Papi Bush, and the CIA didn't like that crap. So they had to get rid of him because he knew too much and he was getting too big for his britches.
Mm-hmm.
So you see what they did to Manuel Noriega. You know, prime example. You know, Saddam Hussein, the same thing. It took Saddam Hussein's side against Iran in the war in the 80s from 1981 to 1989, Iraq versus Iran. We'll fill him up with weapons and everything. And what did he do?
He
turned his back against America and invade Kuwait. You know?
Yeah.
Create these fires. Why? Because the military-industrial complex, war equal money. These war pigs in Washington, mostly Republicans and some corporate Democrats, like Joe Manchin, for example. You know?
I'm not saying that we don't have any warts. We've had quite a few bad apples in the Democratic Party. But in other words, it was told to me in such a way for me to start thinking that all of these things that have happened, it's been under one way or another. It's been under a dominant Republican rule, whether it's House and Senate and a Democratic president, and even with a Republican president, it's been House, Senate, been Republican enough to keep pushing this crap through.
Why did Richard Nixon win the 68 election? He made a deal with the Pol Pot in Vietnam. I'll bring peace. And 4 years in his presidency, the first term, not a goddamn peace. You know?
Yeah. No. Nope.
The war machine had to make money and continue going and everything. You know? The Tonkin Resolution.
Reagan did the same thing in terms of before he became president. His people and negotiated with the hostages, that Iranian hostages that they took, right? They had a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
They pissed off at us. We kind of, you know, undermined the country. But most people don't know that. So after a while, that he negotiated with the hostage takers, and none of them got killed while they were in Iranian hands. But he said, basically, don't let them go yet. We can't have a better deal for you. And the better deal came about when they didn't get out, and so Carter didn't get them out, and people made judgments about that. And as soon as Reagan took the oath of office on that same day is when they got let out, because that was the deal.
He made a deal, an arms for hostage deal, the Contras in Nicaragua got guns for hostages. And the very, as soon as Reagan put his hand on the Bible, press release, news report, Iranian hostages, American hostages in Iran, released. Making Reagan look like, he's a savior. If Jimmy Carter got those hostages out, Jimmy Carter would have won a second term. But because Republicans are so conniving, you know, and this actor, this bad actor, this B actor, this B actor come in and have this nice smile and charismatic and everything. Reagan was the biggest idiot, the biggest clown in politics, just like we have Donald Trump now. Trump is like Reagan on steroids, but stupid. At least Reagan had people around him who knew the stuff and could connive and cheat and cheat and get away with it. Well, except for Poindexter and what's his name? And the one who took the fall for Reagan, Colonel Oliver North, you know?
He got off, too.
You know, but... What is happening in America? It's like we're repeating history again. We're having to learn from the past. You know?
Right.
It's disheartening.
I wonder. I mean, Trump has said, he said it himself, that he would be dictator on one. I know a lot of people in this country heard
him say that? Why doesn't that scare people? Why doesn't that make them think about their choice? If they're thinking about voting for him, if he becomes a nominee, why are they not afraid of a dictatorship? Do they not understand what it is?
Because the people who vote for Trump don't think that a dictator will come after them. You know, like, oh, yeah, I voted for Trump, so I'm safe. No, nothing go like that. No. And every time a dictator comes to power, the first thing they do is go after people's guns. You saw it in North Korea. You saw it in China. You know, Ho Chi Minh against the communists in 1937. Ho Chi Minh, or Chiang Kai-shek versus Chairman Mao. Chairman Mao wiped out, you know, Chiang Kai-shek and whoever else. Came to power, and first thing he and Stalin and whoever, whichever dictator did, was take away the guns from the populace. Now, since FDR days, right through now, every goddamn election, people saying, oh, Democrats coming for our guns.
Right.
If you think that
well,
was
you know
the
what
case,
else they did?
Democrats have
but
the power. Can I make a point, and you make your point? You know, we have had a Congress full of Democrats, the majority, and have a Democratic president. Don't you think by now Democrats would have come for your goddamn guns and taken them already? Why are you so stupid?
That's what I'm trying to say. Why is it that these people do not understand what a dictatorship is? When he was asked point blank, he made a joke of it, but he wasn't joking. They already have the paperwork for it. They have Project 2025. It's done by the Heritage Foundation. It's already in writing. Ready to be rolled out.
Because they're willfully ignorant. They're stupid. They're willfully ignorant, and they're just goddamn stupid.
Remember when they were talking, he was at his conference or the, Republican stuff, and they mentioned about Paul Pelosi. He made a joke about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, who the hell does, I don't need to know what crimes he committed. This man ain't fit. He made a joke about Paul Pelosi being hit in the head with a hammer.
Yes, he did.
He
said it was his gay lover. They were fighting.
Yeah, right.
That's what he said.
Yeah. And also what they is when you protest, they say your protests are going to be violent. You know, they're going to be violent. Remember they called Black Lives Matter protest that was outside of Lafayette Park? There was nothing violent about it except when they rode out on their horses, pepper sprayed them, shot rubber bullets at them, and I guess somebody in the background got beat up real bad. Yeah, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no violence except what they did. So they also go after reporters, and what I just heard was a while back is the number of reporters, journalists who have been killed in this 100 days in the Israeli Gaza conflict is like 83, two of them are somewhere else, and maybe three of them are Israeli, but the rest are Gazans. And so when you target journalists, when you look at that number and compare it with other wars, long wars, those numbers are absolutely dismal. Journalists are killed. Mm-hmm. In fact, this one guy, his whole family got wiped out. He's a journalist. His sons, two sons, his daughter, his wife, his relatives, because they often live together. And he came back to work the next day reporting. Because they target, the things the thugs do is to control you, they threaten your family or they say you're going to disrupt your family, so they back off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's these journalists are being knocked off way more than any other period of time and conflict, according to what they're saying.
Yeah.
So journalists don't do so good telling the truth and protests that don't go along with what they want, and to call them violent when they're not, to justify, beating them up and all that.
Even murdering
and Trump's
them.
Already done that. Yeah. He did that with that peaceful protest on Lafayette Park. When he went across the street and held the Bible up, that one?
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it means he's holy.
Is there
a reckoning
coming? Listen.
Wow.
Is there a reckoning coming? You know, his day of reckoning is coming. Jack Smith have him. Oh. Fannie Willis has him. And the DA, or the Attorney General from New York, has him. All three cases, Letitia James, all three cases, he'll pay big sums, and he's going to prison, I promise you, because nobody's above the law. And I hope Joe Biden not considering pardoning him like
no.
how Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon. I hope not.
Kidding?
I hope not. Because that way
would
drive
an
even
like
bigger
Trump
wedge in America.
Look what Trump has done to his son. I don't think he'll pardon him.
Yeah, and a Republican
you
House.
Know?
Exactly, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
All right,
what
let's wrap up now and everything.
No
we'll have to wrap up now and everything. Come on, on the 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Upcoming in the week, the next week, Monday, I think a week from today, is the New Hampshire primary. Do you think Nikki Haley will win that? Because what happened is it's an open primary where Democrats can cross over and vote in that primary.
I hope not. I don't like it. I don't know.
The alternative is Donald Trump. The alternative is Donald Trump winning again.
Let's hope, you know, that they
mm-hmm.
like her enough to vote for her and hate him enough to not. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anymore. It's so confusing. The other thing we need to keep in mind,
mm-hmm.
this Friday,
mm-hmm.
the government shut down. And all of this other smoke and mirrors all around, I haven't heard anything. Have they come to any sort of conclusion?
Mm-hmm.
Have they come to a deal? Anything.
Not a final one that we know of.
No. That's what I'm saying. And that's Friday. And today is Monday. So I guess
supposedly
Thursday,
Marjorie Taylor Greene said that if Johnson cuts the same deal as McCarthy, that he's out the door and she's going to see to it. So I have no idea where that's coming from.
Who's running against her? Who's running against her? Anybody know? She's
got
to be running in the fall. And, you know, both of them
are running against who?
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Oh, yeah, there's this Democrat. I can't remember his name. He was in the Navy. And is running.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember his name just now. Next show, I'll have his name and his credentials.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's so gerrymandered in District 14 in Georgia, you know? I don't think any Democrat could be Marjorie Taylor Greene because it's so gerrymandered.
You never know.
Hmm.
You never know.
No, trust me. I know. It's a bum king rural area in Georgia. You know, they're ignorant when it comes. Marjorie Taylor Greene is not going to lose her seat. I'm sorry. It's too gerrymandered.
Oh.
Too much rednecks in that section of Georgia. I'm telling you.
Oh.
I heard that the Supreme Court okayed gerrymandering in some way. Have you heard that? I mean, that they didn't say, if it came up that they did not say gerrymandering wasn't right, although at the state level there have been some changes. Like, well, the only reason we got to change here is not the change for the governor, because that can be either way, because that's the whole state voting. But the only reason we changed this legislature was the un-gerrymandering that happened with the people, which the indivisible and people not, the people, not the political people. But anyway, they got enough signatures to put it up to vote. And even after they got the vote, during the lame duck period, the Republicans tried to, they effectively said some crap about the circulated papers where the font wasn't right and da-da-da-da-da, and they reversed it. And the only reason that we got that undone is that we had one more sane person on the Michigan Supreme Court who reversed it back. That's the only reason we ended up changing the legislature. And so state Supreme Courts are very important, and people don't even know that. That made all the difference. So many.
Yes. That has to be the last word. We're running out of time and everything. Doris in Michigan, thank you for calling. Elaine in Michigan, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome.
Have a good night. We're on again on Thursday evening.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Yes, ma'am.
Good night.
Okay, so wrap up time, Lori. Super Tuesday is March 5th. What?
Mm-hmm. I said my
You're
head
saying
is
something?
I said my
Your head,
head
is spinning.
Spinning.
Yeah.
Yeah, we covered quite a bit this evening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pity that Donald Trump, it was expected he was going to win, you know, and by such a wide margin, because evangelicals have taken over the Republican Party, and Iowa is a mostly rural state, and they're doing it better, you know. The 65 and over crowd is dominant, the always vote. You know, so, you know, hopefully one day they'll learn a lesson. I guess that wasn't tonight.
Yeah. Hopefully.
And with the GOP primary being an open primary, hopefully Democrats, enough Democrats will cross over and, you know, give somebody else besides Trump the victory, because, you know, Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis do not deserve the president. Not saying Nikki Haley is a paragon of virtue. She's an idiot, you know, but...
Yeah.
You know, none of those candidates running, Ramaswamy especially, he's just annoying.
Yeah.
Imagine him being president of the United States, how annoying
oh
that
my
would
gosh.
Be.
Oh.
He loves to hear himself talk, you know?
Yes.
Oh, it's sickening. It's nauseating. I want to vomit just thinking about it. Yeah.
No
Special
kidding.
Shout out to the people of La Montañita in Santa Fe. And in Nob Hill and Albuquerque and across the great state of New Mexico, I serve great food and everything. Comfort the bellies. You know, it's think of whole foods, but less expensive and much more delicious food. Yeah. Yeah. La Montañita Co-op. Yeah. Yeah. That should come. You should come try it. We're in Nob Hill. They're in Nob Hill. They're in Santa Fe and other places. Just put in La Montañita, and the information will come up if you're in New Mexico. So, Thursday again is the next show. I hope everybody can join and have some fun and can have a conversation about, you know, the American political discourse and how Trump is a real Nazi and trying to, like, be a dictator. He's a wannabe gangster, and we're not where I love it. You know, this is a democracy, not a theocracy. And religious right, they have no right in politics. You know, they just fuck everything up. Okay,
they
so
sure
thank
do.
You for sharing across social media. Check us out, facebook.com/kitchenpolitics123. There's both a group and a community page, and also kitchenpolitics123.com. We're going to have merchandise up for sale soon, so I hope you can join us there. So until Thursday, same time, same place, I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Good night, Lori.
Good night, David. And this is Lori Picka from Michigan. Everyone have a safe evening and stay warm. See you Thursday. Bye now.
Yeah, and I'm going to leave you now with Dr. Martin Luther King's speech, the I Have a Dream speech, just a part of it. Good night.
Good night.
In Alabama, with its vicious racism, with its governor, dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. Yeah. One day right now in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with this faith. We will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, Let freedom ring from the curvaceous troops of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Drop upon the heart, until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God. What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another. Feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black. We can do well in this country. We will have difficult times. We've had difficult times in the past, but we will have difficult times in the future. It is not the end of violence. It is not the end of lawlessness. And it's not the end of disorder. But the vast majority of white people and the vast majority of black people in this country want to live together, want to improve the quality of our life, and want justice for all human beings that abide in our land. With dedicate ourselves to what the Greeks wrote so many years ago, to tame the savageness of man and make gentle the life of this world. Let us dedicate ourselves to that and say a prayer for our country and for our people. Thank you very much.